Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 996. It's the 16th of February, 2018. On the podcast today, Daniel Betts, Managing Director of Hummingbird Resources, HUM ticker. And Daniel talks about the production ramp-up being on track at the Yanfolila gold mine in Mali. Also on the podcast, David Bramhill, Executive Chairman of Union Jack Oil, gives an operational update on their portfolio of 12 licensed interests across the UK. Plus, John Mayer, Mining Analyst and Partner at SP Angel, talks about Kodal Minerals, KOD, Blue Jay Mining, J, sticker there, and Georgian Mining Corporation, GEO, sticker there. Plus, Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covers the following stocks: Convatec, that's CTEC, ticker Indivoire, INDV, and South 32, S32. All spin-offs, by the way. That's what they have in common. And Chris makes an interesting observation about spin-offs, worth keeping your eye on. Also, I have, as always, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs, too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Daniel Betts, Managing Director of Hummingbird Resources. That's H-U-M. Daniel, thanks for joining me again.
Morning, Justin. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, it's been quite a sort of transformational 6 to 12 months for you, and it'll continue to be do so, I suppose, in the next few months. But before we get into any chat, for people new to the podcast, new to investing, explain to them, Dan, what is Hummingbird Resources all about, please?
Hummingbird Resources is a gold producer. We commissioned our first mine in Mali in December last year, so just 6 weeks ago, and at the moment we are producing gold and steadily going through the ramp up towards commercial production.
Yeah, well, let's get into that. You poured first gold end of December, so talk us through that, the transition from construction to operations to gold poured. Take us through that.
Well, I suppose in the last decade, Hummingbird has been through many stages. We've been an explorer, and then we've designed and built a project, and now we're operating that project. And those three stages are all extremely different, and you need different skills and different teams to execute those areas of the business's development. I'm delighted with the project team. I mean, to deliver gold on time and on budget was no small feat. I think when we started, nobody believed we would deliver Yanfolila for the capex of $88.5 million, and we did that. Mm-hmm. And I think Hummingbird is building a strong track record of doing what it says it's going to do and delivering on time, not over-promising and being steady to its word. I think to answer your specific question, you then move into operations, which is a whole new skill set. Mm. It's far more routine, discipline, checks and balances, training, reporting, and obviously all the process technology to do with the plant, making sure everything's working smoothly. And I must say, I'm delighted so with how it's going. I mean, you know, it's not a simple thing. You turn on a mine, it's not like pressing on a light switch. It's a hugely complex process plant, and there's a lot of moving parts. So that's why there's a ramp-up period. And I must say, I'm cautiously very happy with how things are going.
Yeah, we'll talk about the ramp-up, how it's going. How many, I know you've had figures out there, but how many ounces are you targeting in the first year?
So the ramp-up's going well. I mean, as I say, every operation is subject to a ramp-up period where you test all the various components of the process and the mining operation, and your teams get up to speed. I mean, Hummingbird actually said that we would aim to have completed ramp-up by the end of Q1, and I'm pleased to say we're still on schedule to do that, if anything, you know, ahead of schedule. That's a very aggressive ramp-up. I think if you look industry-wide, people would say 6 months is a industry standard ramp-up period to iron out any crinkles and creases in the process that you may have. But I mean, we said in our DFS that in the first full year of production, so that would be April till April, we were targeting 130,000 ounces of gold, and that's still our target. As I say, I think Hummingbird's been very consistent in delivering to what it has said it will do. And in terms of how the ramp-up is going, well, we're doing well. I mean, the throughput on the mill is over 90%. We're sort of nudging towards design throughputs. The recovery of the plant's over 95%, which is above design throughputs already. Carbon regeneration's going well. Detox is good. The elution circuit's working. Mining is delivering mine to the ROM pad. I mean, you know, it's a challenging operation, as I said, with all the moving parts. But I must say, I am cautiously extremely happy with progress.
Yeah. Well, listen, when Bert last came on, your business development manager, we talked about the president of Mali coming to see you in his official visit to officially open the mine, of course. And now it's been delayed, which doesn't affect the operations in any way, of course, but it's a nice sort of bit of press, isn't it? A nice bit of interest around it. But, so do you have any sort of times when he's going to reschedule? I mean, he's obviously a busy guy being the president.
No, look, it's a good point, and people have made a bit of noise about this, and obviously we're disappointed. We'd love to welcome the president to the mine, but at the end of the day, it's a reality check for us all. He is a president, and he's got a country to run, and he has other priorities. So he is keen to make an official opening, and when he tells us of that date, then we will obviously welcome him to site. But c'est la vie, that's just one of those things. However, the Minister of Mines is due to visit site in the next couple of days. Relationships with the government are stronger than they've ever been, and ultimately, whilst, as you say, it would be nice press to have the TV there and the president cutting the ribbon, it's actually irrelevant in terms of the business.
So you've got a strong cash position, and can you tell us a bit more about the future cash flows and the plans looking ahead, please, Dan?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we do have a strong cash position, stronger than I imagined, and a lot of that is, I mean, obviously the cash in bank at the moment is just under $30 million, which is way more than I anticipated having at this stage. A lot of that, though, is obviously down to the fact that suppliers and contractors have not invoiced us as fast as they may. But we're in a much stronger position than I imagined, and obviously now we're producing gold. So as we announced this morning, we've already produced over 10,000 ounces and will be at full production by the end of March. So with the gold price at 1250, which is obviously a long way below where it is today, with the rally yesterday, we're now at 1354, mm-hmm. We anticipated having cash flows of north of $70 million this year. I mean, that's a huge amount of money if you consider our market cap is only sort of double that.
Yeah.
We have $60 million of debt. I'd look to pay down that debt reasonably aggressively this year. And then after that, we're still going to have a large free cash surplus. So my intention would be to pursue an aggressive exploration strategy this year, but to do it in a disciplined way where we spend no more than circa 15% of free cash flows on exploration, and to show the market that we're planning on being extremely disciplined with the use of that cash and not just spending it on searching for growth's sake. It has to be targeted and has to deliver. And then with the remainder of the free cash, well, there's a lot of options, and I wouldn't rule out any options. I think it's a bit early to be talking about dividends and all the rest of it. There's a lot of unforeseen challenges that the business needs to overcome and get into open water. But I personally think that if the market continues to value us where it is valuing us, then the best use of our capital would be to rebuy some of our shares ourselves. I mean, they're unbelievably good value.
Interesting, yeah, yeah. I know Warren Buffett is a fan of that, of companies that do that. You know, that's one of his investing principles. He looks for companies that do that. It's always good for the share price, apparently.
We understand the value of our business, and to us, I mean, I guess we might talk about this in a minute, but I understand why the share price is where it is. But if it stays there and we have free cash, what better use for it than to invest in our own business?
Yeah. We're talking about, you mentioned exploration there. What are your plans for exploration at Yanfolila?
Well, we have over 1 million ounces of resources outside the mine plan. So the immediate and obvious first place to start is to aggressively look to convert some of those resources into reserves, not only to replenish the gold we'll mine this year, but to extend the mine life. I think, you know, Yanfolila has a very robust 7-year mine plan, but if we could extend that towards 10 years, that would be great. And it would certainly help commentators and analysts on Hummingbird see that this is a mine that's going to have longer legs than the existing mine plan.
Yeah, well, let's go back to the share price. You mentioned that. And, of course, you started pouring gold in December, and the share price has come off a little bit. What's your thoughts there? I know you can do very little about that, apart from buying shares, like you say, you know?
Well, look, at the end of the day, that's the most important question, and it's good to tackle it head on. I mean, I've got a corporate response, and I've got a slightly more personal and emotional response, and I'll give you both. I mean, from a corporate perspective, I understand that the value kicker that these companies get, the re-rating that everyone is looking for, has got later and later and later. And the reason for that is there's been so many failures. You know, junior companies, single asset companies, they get into production, they fall over, and the market doesn't believe them. You know, it's very complicated to get a plant commissioned and ramp up successfully and generate the cash flows you say you're going to generate. And often people get into trouble. So I think there's no doubt that rather than the re-rating happening on the run up to production, I think there's an inherent cynicism in the market that these companies can actually deliver. And they're waiting to see production figures and cash flows. And I think then the re-rating has to happen. And as I say, if it doesn't, then obviously Hummingbird's a great investment for ourselves. But that's my thinking from a corporate perspective. I've got to say, on a slightly more emotional, personal basis, I'm pretty disappointed. I mean, I think I'm probably the single largest individual shareholder in Hummingbird. And having delivered on all our promises, I was fully expecting the share price to go up, not down.
Yeah.
It's pretty disappointing. But I've got to say, it's a slightly self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, lots of noise about there must be a problem, the Twitter world, people needing immediate news flow. Mm-hmm. And actually, they then start to develop a problem in themselves because everyone's talking about it. And actually, all we're doing is exactly what we've promised we'll do, delivering exactly on schedule. And I guess the value has to come through with the numbers. And as you've seen from today's ramp-up figures, everything's going to plan.
Yeah, yeah. But also, I notice on, you know, smaller companies, investors, they're very impatient, but a lot is built into the expectation, you know? And then, like I say, you did go from, 26 pence up to sort of almost 40 pence, almost double there. And I think, you know, some people may have taken some profit. And when the share price goes down, it's a funny thing. A lot of investors, the good ones don't, but a lot of investors tend to sell when the share price goes down rather than do some research and then top up when they realize it's still a bargain here, you know?
Well, everybody has their own strategy. And ultimately, as you say, if people have made 80 to 100% on their investment in anything, the business they're invested in is kind of irrelevant. They've got a bigger game to play and they need to take a profit. And I fully understand that. Mm-hmm. But what I'd say from Hummingbird's perspective is the fact the share price has doubled is completely irrelevant. We're still trading on 2x earnings this year, which is a pretty extraordinary value proposition. And so while some people need to sell to lock in their profits, I would say the value proposition is extraordinary at the moment.
Yeah, well, listen, at levels where it is now, it's coming to a good bit of support level. You're on what's called a 200-day moving average on the chart, which is always a bear bull line, which is quite good. So around about this level. And do you know what? The thing about shares is it may annoy you, but when it gets, I mean, it's a bargain now, but when it gets a super bargain, the bounce will be even more aggressive from that. So
ultimately, I know people get emotional about share prices, and me included, as I've just explained, but ultimately I can only do what I can do. I can only manage the things I can manage, and for me that is delivering on execution, and value will out.
Absolutely, yeah. So you work on the business and the share price will talk for itself. Dan, so if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of Hummingbird but are not yet following the story, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I guess the first one is the one we've just talked about. I mean, we're ridiculously cheap by any matrix. We're ridiculously cheap. So the second reason has to be that the immediate time frame of those cash flows coming into the Hummingbird, they're already happening and they're going to increase. And that's going to give us the third reason, which is a robust business and a platform to explore, increase mine life, look at other opportunities, buy back shares. It's going to put us in a totally new world.
Excellent stuff. Listen, it's good to chat to you, and you've got a busy period ahead, so no doubt we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Bramhill, Executive Chairman of Union Jack Oil. That's UJO, ticker. David, thanks for joining me.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for asking. Always good to be on Vox.
Yeah, well, listen, you've just done an operations update, a new corporate presentation. We'll get to the operations update in a bit. Before we do, for someone listening right now to the podcast and they've never heard of the company, explain in a sentence or so what it's all about, please, David.
Yeah, of course, Justin. What we Union Jack Oil, we go into late-stage projects, drilling onshore UK, production assets, late-stage, and anyone reading the update we put out this morning to see, but we've got a really busy year ahead of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's go through some of the bits there. Let's start off with this sticking plaster, this bone, this pain, really. It's wrestle discovery, because I know there's been a couple of issues there. The planning officer have knocked it back against everyone's better judgment, and no one can understand what's going on, why they're doing this. So what's happening here at pedal, so 182 and 180?
I know to the shareholder, it probably doesn't appear that progress has been made. Mm-hmm. It would have been nice to have been put through from the appeal, but bottom line is it wasn't. No, the only good thing that came out of this is there is no argument about what goes on underground. All that has been sorted out. Everybody is happy enough, is I think the word, you know, council's agreed, Vegden agreed, both sides. Very, very good. What the issue is, was the groundwater, and they couldn't be convinced that the groundwater, what has been done, was good enough. So, effectively, the inspector's written this, I think it's all over the internet, what the inspector says, and I think the inspector's given a really, really good blueprint of what needs to be done in order to make this happen next time around. Mm-hmm. So, we're going to put in a new application in April. And I do know that Egton are doing everything they can, everything that the limited reasons that the inspector used, everything is going to be sorted out and done by Egton. So I'd be, you know, there's a lot of common ground, and this time last year there wasn't. So it's painful. Goodness me, Justin, you know, yeah. Sometimes you could cry over it. But, no, that's it. And I think the main reason that we put the update out today, everyone is sort of thinking, oh, we're a one-trick pony, or they've got us wrestle. That's not true. We've got some really, really, for the size of company we are, we've got some smashing projects.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's go through them. I mean, the next one, so that's wrestle there. Biscothorpe is next. Take us through what's happening there, please, David.
Well, Biscothorpe is ongoing. It's been partner approval. You know, it's going to be drilled this year. Mm-hmm. We said that last year, but this year is where it started. You know, everything is happening again in the background of what should be happening, and we're confident of this really, really nice well is going to be drilled this year.
Yeah, and what's the potential there? What do you know about this? What do you even know about it?
Well, I know quite a lot because we've done a lot of extra work on it as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we've employed, you know, our own independent people. Look, even though we're not the operator, it's nice to know what's going on and people's views. And again, if you read the corporate presentation we put up this morning, there's a lot of good stuff in there. It was a previous discovery by BP. It was a very, very thin, just a few meters. And the idea is as you go down dip, it's going to get thicker. If that's the case, terrific. Now, if there's extra stratigraphic areas there, which we should be looking at, then it'll be found. And as you can see, it's about 40 million barrels of oil onshore. That's a terrific, that's some figure.
Yeah.
Are we hopeful? Of course we are. Mm-hmm. Yes, otherwise you wouldn't be drilling it. But it's nice to see that all the experts agree that it's a great prospect.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and on to the next one. So it's Holmwood. What is? Give us an update there, please, David.
Holmwood, still waiting for planning. On the final of all the points that the Surrey Council have brought up, they're still waiting for one point to be sorted out, and hopefully in March everything will be okay. But again, that one has been slow.
Yeah. Well, it's often the case, though, isn't it, when it goes to planning? So, it's wherever you are in the world, whenever you're dealing with some kind of department of government, it can take time.
Absolutely.
And sometimes
a lot longer than you ever imagine, unfortunately. Completely out of the hands of any of the boards or joint venture partners. You know, we're as eager as everybody to get these things done.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, next one is Fiskerton Oilfield, Airfield Oilfield. So what's going on?
I love it. We were lucky enough to obtain 20% from Egdon on that. It's a field that we've always wanted to own. We've been up there loads of times, Graham, Bill, myself, and luckily we've managed to get a piece of this action. The workovers on the wells, it suffered from a lack of investment over the years from another company. Egdon have taken it over, and now everything is being streamlined, upgraded. One of the workovers is practically complete, another 2 or 3 weeks, and then we move on to the other well. So within, say, give a timetable, probably about 8 weeks or so, maybe even 6, everything will be there and be oil flowing, and that's some more revenue for us.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? This update is very good because it does show how much interest you have. And, you said before, some people said you're a one-trick pony, which is clearly is completely untrue, and people who say that probably haven't researched you properly. Because next is Kirklington and Duke's Wood Oil Fields. What's going on there, David?
They're basically an unknown. We acquired these when we bought the entire portfolio of Cairn Energy onshore. Mm-hmm. From a company, an onshore company we had called Nautical. So the prize in that one, as far as we were concerned, was Kennington.
Yeah.
But in order to buy that, we had to take Duke's Wood and Kirklington on board. Two old discoveries. And we're looking at ways to see, is there anything we can do to bring these wells online? I'd say we're hungry. Every barrel of oil for us is a real prisoner. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're looking to do. We don't go for opportunities which are fruitless, believe me. Mm-hmm. So it was possibly a chance. It wouldn't be the top of our list, but there's certainly possibility and potential there, of course.
Yeah, and finally, you said, and Kennington there, what's going on at Kennington?
Still ongoing, it's pumping away merrily. Again, very, very good. And we're looking at ways, to see there's certainly more oil there. We need to find out, it's very close to Louth and other decent prospects. We love Kennington. In fact, if we like all our projects, we wouldn't be in them otherwise.
Yeah. There's an interesting bit in your RNS today where you say, in a recent announcement, going forward, you intend to be more hands-on and you also intend to be more flexible and entrepreneurial. Explain that. So why have you decided to do this, David?
It's a question. We're working on a few things at the moment, and it's something I'm really. I'm not being coy with shareholders or yourself, Justin. We're working on it, and hopefully, soon enough that we can announce, our plans. When I say announce, highlight what we intend to do in the future.
I see.
That hasn't answered your question. I know that, but please just forgive me.
I know what you mean. You can only reveal so much until you are an asset. I understand that.
It's a world. There's a world out there. We'll probably never ever go away from what our focus is, which is onshore UK. Yeah. But the opportunities are amazing. They really, really are.
There's
lots of things to be done, and you can probably see that by new companies. I shouldn't really give them a plug, but they can have it. Raybould, you know, look what they're doing.
They're
entrepreneurial. You've got a Corallian, new company, private company. Again, you know, they're doing things which haven't been seen for a long, long time because of the oil price. And I think the oil price, like onshore UK, even $60, hey, hell of a lot better than $38 just like this time last year.
Yeah, absolutely. So
I suppose, you know, I'd love to enlighten and pad out what I mean by that. But I'm hoping that shareholders will click and say, yeah, they're going to do something, and we are. So...
Well, with all these, David, exciting prospects, I mean, are there sort of any plans for directors to buy shares here before you can answer?
Justin, what a question. I am under, the board and myself are under pressure nearly every single day from the bulletin board punts saying, oh, why don't the directors ever buy shares? Mm-hmm. And it's so difficult with what we're doing, the type of company we are. There's probably never a week go by where we've got something up our sleeve, and you can see last year we were very, very busy. This year we're going to be even more busy.
And the
time, I could cry when I see sometimes, like yesterday was a bad day for our share, today is a good day. But do you not think that the directors, if we were allowed to have bought, we wouldn't have been in there like ferrets?
We really
would have been. And there's a new rule as well. It's very difficult. It's called Mars, you know, inside dealing and all that. And it's even more difficult now than it was a year ago to buy shares. You have to get various permissions. And plus, we've got our annual report coming out very soon enough. And you've got a timetable there. Plus, with things going on in the background, there's a lot of, what would you call, noise happening. So we can't even go. I'm glad you asked that question because it's very difficult to defend yourself. And you know, we've got a lot of skin in this game. We you know, every single share, like some companies issue shares on the cheap. We don't do that to directors or anything like that. Or even though we haven't even got any options in the company, because until Wrestle happens, you know, that would be one of the big jewels in the crowns which needs to be brought on. And Biscuitfort, you know, we need a proper event in order to basically have our options. So there's no options. Director salaries are pretty low, low enough, but we won't talk about those. But it's a good question about the shares, because we'd love to buy, but it's so difficult now.
Yeah, well, I often question that. I mean, people, I mean, because like I said, I assume that's your job is to talk about things that are happening in the future of your company. And obviously there's closed periods all the time. And if you're talking about something that's significant, then obviously, you know, you can't buy it. And I often wonder if there's, you know, very few, especially a company like yourself, we have lots of interests in different investments around the company. There's lots going on. And so I can imagine there's hardly ever a time you're not in a closed period. And if you did buy shares, you'd be on dodgy ground, essentially, you know?
You're absolutely right, Justin. There's very, very few windows open for this.
Okay.
And it's a terrible shame because, you know, they classify it as inside dealing, and, you know, nobody, you know, my board aren't interested in that. All we're interested in making success of the company. Believe me, there's no... And it'd be lovely to be able to say, hey, look, guys, we're putting our money where our mouth is. We've done so in the past. Yeah. There was a lot of skin. Our money is put into this company, you know, Joe Farrell especially.
You know? Yeah, yeah. Okay. So, well, listen, David, if anyone's listening and like the sound of what you're doing but are not following the story, please give them three reasons right now why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I think we always try to do as we say. There are very few things we have announced that haven't happened. You know, we push to get things done. And also, we're transparent. Shareholders often call me up and... and the flavour and the feeling from them is all very, very nice and very supportive. Well, I think the most important thing going forward is the news flow, the expected news flow from the company. Mm-hmm. You know, hopefully, I see that our broker, SV Angel, put out a note, and I suppose people say, well, they'd say that anyway, wouldn't they? But it's a good note, and I don't think 2017, although there's a lot of work done, was our best year, far from it. Yeah. 2018, I'm pretty sure, you know, there's a lot of things happening going forward. I'm confident.
Excellent stuff. David, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin. Bye-bye, everybody.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. How was South Africa, John?
South Africa was hot, it was dry, although it rained on the last day when I left, and it's getting ready for the potential impeachment of President Zuma. Mm. The ANC met last night and agreed to kick him out.
Yeah.
The question is just how they do it now.
Yeah, he's refusing to go, isn't he? But I mean, when you were down there, obviously the mining conferences there, I mean, was that part of the talks, and also the problem with water there, wasn't it? You know.
Well, we were at the one-to-one conference. In Cape Town, companies were meeting, over 300 investors and analysts there, and the sheer number of new investors walking around looking for mining stocks was extraordinary. I've not seen that number of investors at any conference in the mining industry before, and that really marks a bit of a change from where we've been over the last few years.
Yeah, but does that signify a top of the market though, or not? What do you think?
Well, I hope we're not at the top of the market. I know the US equity markets have been very volatile of late.
Yeah.
I think when it comes to mining and resources, you know, yes, everything can be affected by everything else. But at the end of the day, these are companies that are building value, creating fundamental value, and commodity prices are looking very good.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, let's get on to some company-specific news, and I know one of the stocks you look at is Kodal Minerals, KOD ticker, and they've had drilling results that confirm the Segola Bouoli, I don't know how to say that, extension at the Bougouni Lithium Project, and it's quite bullish. I see Bernard there, the CEO, was quite bullish, and he said there's a positive impact on the scaling opportunities for future development, and he seemed like, he said, priority targets continue to suggest a mining hub can be developed at Bougouni. So he's quite bullish on this asset. What's your take on it, John?
Well, I saw Bernard down in Cape Town at the one-to-one. He had a jam-packed day of meetings with investors when he was down there. Mm-hmm. So he's a busy, busy boy. Those results look good. It's more of the same, but more of the same is what we're looking for.
Yeah.
We're looking for the scale of the Bougouni project to get larger and larger, to hopefully catch up with the scale of the similarly named project, which is owned by Birimian Limited, mm-hmm, next door in Burkina Faso. And, you know, either these two projects are going to get combined, or Birimian Limited are going to hit the button and on a revised feasibility study and hopefully build that project.
Yeah.
We know that Birimian were looking for a bit more scale before they reworked the engineering plan on that. And I think these hard rock lithium projects are still very much flavor of the month when it comes to financing and future production.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it's a decent project, and more of the same is good. Like you say, it's positive results. There was a bit of a question over the licensing and all that a while back, but that's been ticked off now and sorted out. The shares moved a little bit, but didn't move a lot. I mean, what do you think investors are looking for here?
Well, we had a little bit of negative news or negative sentiment when SQM in Chile, which is one of the world's largest lithium producers, said that they had permission to expand their operations. But that's not going to come through for some years, and expansion maybe not as easy as everybody thinks. But it did put a little bit of a dampener on things. We do see that there's going to be sufficient demand for nearly all of these lithium projects one way or another. Certainly the demand, sufficient demands for the ones we think we're going to get financed.
Mm.
And I think there's going to be quite a lot of hard rock projects that come through, because they are the capital cost is less, and the complexity of financing them is going to be easier. So I think sometimes it's a question of what can be done, and I think in this case Codal is reasonably well placed.
Yeah. Okay. Lovely stuff. And of course, they're in a sort of 12 million market cap at the moment, so there's plenty of potential to move up the value chain here. You know, so compared to some other companies which are. And multiples of that, aren't they, really?
It certainly is, and it may well be that Birimian Limited look over the fence and say, well, if we buy that, it'll bulk up the resource that we already have, and then they can plan the finance.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, it's a bit of news on Blue Jay Mining, ticker there, J. What's happening there?
Yes, we raised £15 million for Blue Jay just over a week ago, well supported by a number of big name institutions, certainly developing a great deal of interest in the marketplace. We're expecting the ilmenite price, that's the raw material that they will produce. They'll produce an ilmenite concentrate off the beach sands in Greenland. And we're expecting the price to go up by 10-20%, maybe even more in the relative short term. Because we're going through what's known as the mating season for ilmenite concentrates right now. For those who don't know, ilmenite is used for it's a titanium feedstock. Not much of it goes into titanium metal. Most of it goes into pigments for paint and ink. Yeah. So in fact, that's about 90% of the marketplace, and the rest is titanium for aircraft parts and bits and pieces like that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, it's interesting stuff there. We've often chatted about it, been very little news though from the Georgian Mining Corporation camp. I know the last thing they said, they mentioned they were talking about in the final stages of negotiations with Caucasian Mining Group. It's 50% partner, of course. So final stages, when was that? That was in December. So are they still chatting? What's going on there? Are they still on the table? Are they not on a break?
Sometimes silence is golden, and we can only assume that the reason we haven't heard any update recently is because they've been buried deep in negotiations, and we hope that they are very close to finalising all of that. But what I would say for investors is bear with it, because there's the gold cap on the top of this hill. The copper resource underneath looks like it's going to grow and grow and grow. So from an asset value perspective, this is something that we are really looking forward to for an awful lot of future value. I think it's just a question of banging a few heads together and hopefully creating an early mining deal.
Yeah. Is there anything else you can reveal that's, you know, that won't implicate you in any way, but any kind of any rumourings, any gossip, anything going on?
I think it would be inappropriate to go on to any gossip. Thank you.
I wouldn't expect anything less from you, John Brothers. So that's fine. So, in your head, I mean, is this silence positive in your head? What do you think?
Yes, I think silence is golden, and I think I much prefer there to be an RNS, a positive RNS out from the company, and I'm hoping that will come soon, because you know these are guys that do understand that they need to communicate with the market. They are reasonably market savvy. They're very straightforward people, and there's huge experience on the board, and there are good people who also want to go in there and help with the mining. So yes, I do. I think investors just have to be patient, and I'm sorry that feels painful sometimes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the shares are now at 12.8, or looking at 12 pence there. And on the chart, it's looking quite good. It's sort of settling down. It's obviously spiked up previously, come down. And that's the trouble on AIM, you know, small stocks. They're very much news-driven, aren't they? So, well, I suppose most stocks are, really. So that lack of news, even though you see the share price go down, then it may present an opportunity, you know, to top up or for new investors. You know, you never know, because obviously the chance of it become going multiples from the lower the market cap is. You know, like I said earlier, I mean, the lower the market cap is, the more chance of it really motoring on good news, I suppose, doesn't it? You know,
I think you've hit it absolutely on the nail, and I have a great deal of confidence in the value of this asset going forwards. The one thing I can't predict is when the two sides will actually sign an agreement.
No, exactly. Who can? Well, I don't think even the company know that, so I wouldn't expect you to know it. Marvellous, John, thanks for that. Thanks for the update, and hopefully we'll speak next week.
Justin, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You all right, Chris?
Hello. Yeah, very well. Thank you. Very well.
Yeah, it's been a bit of volatility we've seen in the last couple of weeks, mainly driven by America. And I noticed that it was off the back of good news, though. You know, it was, I think, unexpected economic sort of the employment went up. So there's worry about interest rates going up as well to sort of calm it down a bit. What's your thoughts on the market at the moment, Chris?
It's all good fun, isn't it? But, you know, welcome back to normal markets, I would say. This is what it's normally like. Maybe not quite to this level of volatility, but, you know, I think the aberration is going to be much of what we've seen over the last 5 or 7 years, where it just seems every dip, it has to be bought. And it just doesn't work like that. You know, the market is not, is rarely a straight line. Look, my feeling is quite clear that we clearly are moving into a different environment. You haven't got effortless amounts of stimulus from central banks at the margin now being applied. And as a consequence, we go back to the old rules, which are, funnily enough, you look for interesting businesses which are thematically interesting, which are doing a good job from an earnings and a cash flow perspective. And that's what you focus on. I think it's an environment now which is terrible for tracker funds. You know, frankly, I could see the FTSE 100 doing absolutely nothing A to B for the rest of the year. So on a tracker fund, in that scenario, you'd get absolutely zero as well, maybe a little bit of div. But I think it's an environment where you want to be a stock picker. And then it comes back to the old rules of knowing what you're investing in and why. And for me, that's always been the way. I think beyond, you know, way before the global financial crisis of 2007 to 9, that's how it always used to be. And you picked stocks and you lived and died by their attributes and everything else. And I think that's what we're going back to. So bring it on, I say, albeit I probably quite like just a slightly lower level of volatility. I think the grinding 2% up, 2% down is not good for anybody, really.
Yeah. I mean, I think the tracker fund is only good if we are at the bottom historically of a market and you're new to the market, you know nothing about stocks and shares, and so you just want to get exposure to the stock market because it's all-time lows. If you're shorting and you know a bit about it, you know, maybe a tracker fund in that way. But when you're like where we are at the moment and it's volatility, it can go nowhere for a long time. That's why you have to, you know, seek out those sort of, you know, stocks that are undervalued and go with those, I suppose. So
I would totally agree. And I think, look, yes, they are cheap and hence they're loved by many financial advisors, and I understand the reasons why. And they have been successful products because of the type of market we've had over much of the last sort of 8 or 9 years. However, looking forward, I think they're going to struggle against some of the more kind of stock picking driven strategies. That would be my kind of big picture view. And I think for the individual investor, particularly those that want to get their hands dirty and actually want to get engaged with the market, there is nothing like starting small, but picking your own stocks. And you learn that way. And when you pick something for good or bad reasons in the fullness of time, that's how you learn. So my feeling is start small, start with things that you know about or you feel you have an edge on or an insight on, and go from there. It's not an easy game, but it is a fun one.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, let's look at some individual stocks first. What are you looking at?
Right, well, I think we've got a little bit of a theme going on today. There's these three companies I'm going to talk about today, they've all reported full year numbers this morning. Obviously, we're at that time of year where lots of companies are reporting, you know, their 12 months to the end of December 2017. First one's come out of private equity in the last couple of years. It's a company called Convatec, which, you know, may not be a household name. The ticker's CTEC, but it is a 4 billion quid company. So, you know, it is FTSE 100 level in terms of market cap.
Let's take a CTC, is it?
CTEC.
CTEC, right.
Right, there you go.
There you go.
And, you know, it's a very important product it makes, among others, colostomy bags. Now, and I'm speaking probably to a demographic, which probably laughs at the need for them, but believe me, there's a widening and broadening number of people that unfortunately do need such products, among other sort of medical and related products they do. So thematically, it's in an interesting spot. And the trouble is, it's been really interesting following it. I don't own the shares, but I like sort of the area that they're in. I think it is a growth area ultimately over time, and they seem to have good market positions. But since they've come out of private equity, they have made one blunder after another. The most recent was that they had a really big problem in one of their factories. And, you know, if you can't produce the goods to sell, guess what? Your margins and your profits and everything are going to go down. And that's what's happened. Mm-hmm. And apparently that's going to continue impacting a little bit during the first little bit of 2018. Here's the interesting observation, though. Despite that, despite them saying, yep, we're still bogging it up and underperforming in 2018 versus our potential, the shares are up, I think, about 6% when I last looked this morning.
5%, yeah, at the moment.
Yeah. Now, that's a really interesting combination, because when you get a continuation of patchy news, but the share goes up, you start to wonder how much is factored in. Now, this is not the cheapest share in the world, but it's not horrendously expensive at my first filters, and certainly it's on depressed profits. Look at that share price range. It seems to be in a bit of a channel at the moment between about 180 and 220 and pence, and it was trading much higher than that, let's say, last summer before all the whoopsies happened. So my feeling is north of 220. I'm not a big technical analyst, but my view would be that's when people will start saying, hang on, is this one actually properly recovering? And I'd say the reaction today is very interesting. They got their conference call on this morning. I'm going to be pacing all over the documentation, etc. But just the vibe around this one feels interesting, feels as one to keep in touch with, maybe putting a little alert if it does pop its head above that 220p level for those of a more technical-minded nature.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just past an interesting level here, which is around about 210, in fact, 208. It closed at, and then didn't manage to get above that recently. And then previously, it did get up sort of 218 intraday at 220, and it came back off that. So if it's above the first bit of resistance here. If it gets up, like you say, beyond 220, that looks quite good in the chart. So yeah. There we are. Well, what's next, Chris?
One out of Reckitt Benckiser. So Reckitt Benckiser, we all know, is the big kind of consumer products company, all sorts of interesting household and related products they have. But a couple of years back, or actually a bit more than that, 3-4 years ago, they spun off a sort of a pharmaceutical business called Invidial. And this one, it's a funny name and it's a funny company. The ticker on that one is, I forget what the ticker is now, INDV, I think, something like that. It's a decent-sized company and a $3 billion size market cap. Its main product, actually, it's all to do, you may have heard in the States particularly, but it's a global trend, unfortunately, of lots of opioid and related abuse issues. Yeah. So, you know, heroin and related products. And unfortunately, it is still a growth area. And so this company produces drugs which help people to come off that addiction or to manage it. It's obviously an area which has some unfortunate thematic attraction. So what's interesting on this one is twofold. Number one is they've got a $3 billion market cap, I noticed, but they've put aside about a tenth of that market cap in order to counter various legal and related issues, because they're facing generic competition, they're facing all sorts of legal cases, lawsuits against them from a variety of operators and generic drug companies and everything else. And this has been why the share has been so volatile over the last couple of years. What's interesting is with spin-offs is that often they're undervalued. And this one came to the market, I think, at about 150 pence. And it more than doubled over the last couple of years. And in the last few months, it's been highly volatile, sort of around the, between the, I think, I recall, between the 300 and 400 pence area. So what was kind of interesting on this one is a product which is required. They've got a good pipeline, new products coming in to replace their sort of their previous core product. And also they're looking at other areas like schizophrenia and whatever, which are kind of related. So lots of potential here. But my observation on this one is, my goodness, in terms of the range of scenarios that you might see, I'm sort of stepping back and just letting it kind of come to me. They are talking about a 7% rise in profit for this year. But the thing that will really drive this share is whether they see this generic competition or whether some of these lawsuits really do stick or not. So it's a very legal and technical share. And I would say watch for that 300 pence level. That seems to be an interesting point on the chart. And this one tends to reward volatility, i.e. when you see big drops, buy and sell into strength. It is a very volatile share, but actually one which is trying to do good for those unfortunately impacted by opioid and related drug issues.
It is INDV. All right, what's the next one then, Chris?
So final one is one as a stock called South 32, which came out of Billiton a few years back. So a mining company. Look, Billiton, after the sort of the mining boom crashed, they got religion and they said, look, we're going to get rid of all of our non-core metal businesses. Mm-hmm. So they lumped aluminium and silver and zinc and manganese and all kinds of other stuff that was non-core for them into a company called South 32. And it's mainly based in Australia. It's got an Australian listing too, as well as a London one, as well as also a South African one. It's got some assets in Africa too. So it's a bit of a rag bag collection. And what's interesting is I think they spun it off at about 100 pence. It dumped to 40 pence. And since then, it's been just on a massive roll. And, you know, what's interesting about this one is it's actually got net cash on the balance sheet. It's still, I think, misunderstood a bit by investors. And again, it shows that when these big companies spin off assets, sometimes you actually can be getting a cracking bargain. Undoubtedly, the better conditions for the mining companies has helped over the last little while. I think with this one, I like the tone of the statement today. Lots of focus again on cash flow generation and shareholder remuneration. The yield is about 4.7%. And at a 5% yield, I'll be buying this one. 5% yield, I think it's happening on it at about around about the 200 pence level, 180 to 200 pence level. So, you know, we're sort of getting towards that point now. This one moves in 20p intervals. Note the levels of support are 200p, 180p and 160p. Mm-hmm. But my feeling is, you know, again, probably not a very well-known mining company. You know, everyone knows Billiton or Rio's or Anglo's or a variety of other ones. But actually, with a rag bag of assets in some interesting geographies, I would say worth a second look, and particularly if you're getting paid to wait. As I say, that 5% yield level, I think that would be consistent with about 180 pence a share, would be a point where actually I'm thinking, actually, this could be quite interesting. So, yeah. Like the tone of the comment there, again, not a well-known company, but, you know, quite an interesting one.
Yeah, I held BHP, Chris, and when they did this deal and they spun this out. And as part of that deal, as a holder, I got some shares, you know, in S32. And I did what I think a lot of people did. When you got them, just sold them straight away because I didn't, you know, I hadn't done research in this company. I thought, why do we need to own them? And you can see, like you said, the share price just took a dive from the IPO. And I think that was just most people just selling, you know. Yeah. And then it hit sort of 40 pence, and literally, from 40 pence now up to £2. So that's I a bit silly there, a bit preempted there, and I sort of I should have paid a bit more attention. But I suppose at the time when they started going down, I thought, oh, I've done well there, sold straight away at the top, you know. But now I haven't seen the share price since I sold, and they're going, wow, look at that. Yeah. I missed out there, but that's shares for you, I suppose.
I think in terms of stock market strategies going forward, look, you're not going to have this sort of great support from lots of easy money and cheap money. That's increasingly going to go away. So you've got to look for techniques which help. And I can honestly say spin-offs are one of the most interesting themes to look at, because when a big company or it sort of splits up or gets rid of a small unit or something, you know, often one of those areas is undervalued. Maybe it's the big company. Maybe suddenly the big company looks sharpened up and more interesting, or maybe it's the sort of the smaller spin-off business. And certainly you look at the stocks that we've talked about today, and, you know, there are opportunities to trade them. And certainly the last two, coming out of Reckitt's and Billiton, a lot of people would have got those. And as you say, the immediate reaction was to sell them. But Sometimes the savvy investor, the medium-term investor, says, okay, this might actually be more of an opportunity than a threat. And in both cases, people have been rewarded if they got their timing right, which obviously comes from research.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I'm going to put a mental note in my head there and whenever I see a spin-off, I'll just look into it a little bit, because it's always worth maybe putting on a price alert, and if it gets at a certain level, like that was ridiculous. The drop-off had happened there. So and of course, what we had there was a change around, like you say, the mining sentiment in certain metals, and you know, the resurgence of mining and resource companies helped a lot, because now we're a lot more bullish than we were back when that happened. So the change around has helped. Marvellous stuff. Chris, thanks for that, and we'll speak next week, fella.
That's good. Bye-bye.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Sure Ventures, S-U-R-E. Yeah, I think one worth keeping an eye on. They're in the tech sector, venture capital fund. And so it's a good way to get exposure to really stocks and can multi-bag, hopefully. And all these kind of companies need, like I said to Barry when he came to the podcast, is one decent one. And that's it. It's game-changing. So that's S-U-R-E. Just keep an eye on it, you know. Read about the tech stocks they're invested in. At four, and you may read about one and think, wow, that's amazing. At four, Frontera Resources, FRR. At three, Ascent Resources, AST, because Colin was on yesterday. At two, Saffron Energy, SRON. And number one, most followed company, is Talou Energy, TLOU. I think some people are getting it, you know. When a company falls and it has an excellent, compelling story, then the value, as long as the story hasn't changed dramatically, I mean, I think Talou Energy, just a couple of, you know, administration hiccups, that's all it is. But, you know, still a compelling story. Botswana still desperately have an energy deficit, and they're looking towards cleaner, you know, resources or solutions like coal-bed methane rather than diesel or coal-fired stations. You know, I think it's still compelling. And, of course, once the share price drops like it has at Talou, then it becomes more compelling because the upside is greater because the value there that can be generated is bigger. Anyway, that's Talou, most followed company. Okay, time for the top five most liked RNSs. And a friend of mine did say recently he's new to investing. What is an RNS? It's a RNS, sorry, Regulatory News Service announcement. Any company that has, you know, potentially price significant news, they have to release it officially through official channels, and that's via the London Stock Exchange's Regulatory News Service. And the majority of these come out at 7 a.m. They can release midday if that news, you know, if it's a bit later, because they have to pass the news by their Nomad or whatever it'll name, or their broker, and it has to be passed, of course. But majority of those are via the RNS service at 7 a.m. and that's when you need to get your Vox Markets app. You know, just follow companies, and whichever company you follow, you'll get notifications to the front screen of your phone for free whenever they release significant news. All right, at five, W Resources, $35 million loan facility finalised with BlackRock. At four, Saffron Energy, posting of AIM admission document. At three, Sunrise Resources, CS project, positive drilling results. At two, Angus Energy, first stage of Balcombe partnership completed. And number one, most liked RNS, Daniel was on the podcast earlier, Hummingbird Resources, Yennefer-Lila ramp up and exploration update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciatos.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.